everybody, and welcome to the Professors In podcast. As always, we are delighted that you are here with us today. I am Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of the Professors In.
And I am Kel Weinhold, and I am a productivity coach and all-around communication specialist. And as always, happy to have you here in the land of communication. You can find us at theprofessorisin.com. You can find us on Twitter at professorisin.com. No, the.
Not dot com, though. Just professorisin.
Professorisin, right. And you can find a mountain of free information on the blog. Absolutely. Oh, I forgot the Facebook page. And then there's a Facebook page. I forget the Facebook page because the Facebook is the devil.
Because you hate Facebook. Mm-hmm. And actually, we have a Professor Is Out group mutual support page for people who are departing the academy. And you can find that as well if you look for it, or just contact us if you can't locate it on the evil landscape of Facebook.
And as I continue to stand on my hill, ready to die, carrying my banner that Facebook is, in fact, one of the major forces in the fall of democracy, I invite you to come over and join me on the Professor Is In page on the Mighty Network, where we sort of keep things all about the academy. Leave the rest of it to the rest of it.
Well, I'm there too. And actually, if you become a member of the podcast, that's where the podcast member page is on Mighty Networks. And that's because Kel was unwilling to have it be on Facebook. And that's where we are. So there's a page there where we talk and chat and do AMAs. And in fact, we're going to do lives on Friday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific. And also ask you what you think we should talk about. So today's topic is actually the direct result of a reader and a member of the podcast asking a question on that page.
Those of you who are podcast members also know that we're recording this right now with video. So you can watch us sit at a table and talk. Some scintillating footage.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
Yeah. Anyway,
moving on. So yeah, today, what's the topic that you want to talk about today, Dr. Kelski?
Well, the person on the Mighty Networks page said, I'd really like some advice for managing academia as an HSP, which is a highly sensitive person. And she said, I find myself getting overwhelmed. And I said, you know, that's amazing. I believe that I am such a person as well. Although that term was not, like so many others, was not around when I was young. So there was not even a chance of encountering it or identifying myself as that. But anyway, person who is extremely sensitive to stimuli. And you are too, really.
I am extremely sensitive to stimuli. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of highly sensitive person, you know?
I can't talk about that. Because mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I mean, I hear people use that, and I've certainly used that, but I haven't read the definitions of it. Mm-hmm. But I totally feel comfortable talking about how to manage stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
How to manage incoming data, because depending mm-hmm. on my level of groundedness is my ability to handle incoming data.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What I think is really interesting, just as a side note, I work with, so as part of Unstuck, the Art of Productivity, which is my productivity coach, which somebody, it's on Facebook today, but somebody called it like a virtual hug.
I saw that on videos. Twitter.
Yeah. Anyway, Unstuck, the Art of Productivity is a program that I do. And within that, I work with people face to face all day long mm-hmm. in small writing groups and all sorts of stuff. And it's clear to me in this last year of the pandemic, in the just racial reckoning that's happening worldwide and in the U.S., sort of are enduring the 4 years of really so many people feeling threatened,
mm-hmm.
That a lot of the things that may not have been an issue for people are an issue for people. So attention is mm-hmm. is a big issue, maintaining your attention. And then having the resources not to overwhelm, which is what I think of highly sensitive is like, the space between you being fine and you being tipping into overwhelm is a mm-hmm. lot smaller than it mm-hmm. is for some people. Mm-hmm. So I just think that, you know, it's valuable for everybody right now in this current situation, combined with folks who have been dealing with these things ongoing for lifetimes mm-hmm. to think about where, how to separate yourself from stimuli. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just an aside.
You know, that's, I think that's central to it, actually. I have three thoughts about it as you were talking, and I hope I can remember all three, and I can promise you right now I won't. But the first one is, I think you came out of therapy one day and said overwhelm is when you feel two emotions at one time.
More
than one emotion at a time. That was transformative for me to hear that, and I think about that a lot. The other thing that I think about overwhelm is that I have started to, by realizing that overwhelm is not just a natural condition of the human condition, which I had previously thought it was, and is in fact a specific experience that you can have more or less of, or you can have or not have. Like you can maneuver. That was news to me, that you don't have to stay in a state of overwhelm. Was first of all recognizing the symptoms of overwhelm in me, and there are two of them. One of them is extreme irritability. When I start sort of internally raging, I know now that I'm overwhelmed and I have to take a step. Sometimes that is taking a nap or otherwise being, you know, anyway, we can talk more about what to do. And then disassociation. My eyes glaze over and I stop being able to take stuff in. And so that's the second thing I wanted to say. And then the third thing, and I can't believe I remembered all three, is that I have had to, now having identified overwhelm as a thing that can be examined, identifying the symptoms of it, then taking steps to deal with it, that I realized, and you will know this conversation about 3 months ago, that in the pandemic, I am so consistently overwhelmed and maxed out. The things that were always challenging have now become almost intolerable. And what that means specifically is that when we're in a social engagement, in a social distance, social engagement where we're hanging out with people, but we're, you know, really far apart, but we're talking and stuff, that I have discovered that I have a switch off point at an hour and a half and I can't take anymore. And I start to disassociate or dissociate, because I remain unclear how you pronounce that word. Anyway, and when I finally got up the nerve to tell you that, it was a big turning point. And I told you that I wanted to tell our friends that, so that I would say to them with great love and affection, I love you, I respect you, I appreciate you, I value you. This is not personal, but I'm going to have to leave after an hour and a half because I just can't take anymore. And the folks I'm talking about are much more extroverts than I am, and they're people who just love to talk. And I'm like, why? I cannot believe, like, you, why are you still talking? Like, which is the thing that echoes in my mind all the time. Why are you still talking? Anyway. And so I realized there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with the way they socialize. I just can't do it, especially in the pandemic. The thing is, I haven't worked up the nerve to say it yet. I can't figure out how to say it. But having thought about it and said, maybe I will say it, has actually improved the experience quite a bit.
And I think, let's just switch this over to operating in the academy. I don't know that there's a value to saying it. And so if I don't know that there's a value, like, this is very different than when you have like close friends that you care about. But I also wonder about that too. But so let me parse it out two ways. That if we were to switch this over to just sort of, how do I operate in a system when I know that I have limits, when I start to overwhelm, when I start to not be able to hear and understand what people are saying, when I start to get irritable, I think the first step, which is you have to notice that it's a thing, that mm-hmm. it's not just you, like, there's this way that everybody operates, or this, mm-hmm. there's this thing that you have to stay like that. But you can notice it, and then you can make a plan for managing it or not getting there, right? So to my mind, then that becomes getting a plan for your exit. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean announcing a plan for your exit. Mm-hmm. It means getting a plan for your exit.
I skipped a step. The initial step was that we were going to drive to events separately so that I could just exit. And I did do that once, and it did help.
All right. And so if we move this back to when the pandemic's over and you have to go to all those faculty things, mm-hmm. I think that we get in our heads that we have to do something. Like, I have to stay till it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, We had another friend in that friend group who came the other day and said, I have a meeting in an hour, so this is all I can stay. He had dinner, he left, you know, and he left. That was that.
I know. If I had a meeting every time, it'd be really easy. The trouble is I don't have any meetings
right,
at night.
You do
I
have just... a meeting. You have a meeting with yourself and your well-being. But anyway, I'm
well,
just
not,
saying.
Well, that's not, but anyway, that's a critical point then. We should talk about that. Do I have, well, but am I supposed to lie and say I have a meeting, but it's just with myself? Or am I supposed to say... Or what am I supposed to say? Like, what is your advice?
I guess my advice is, if we're talking about the academy, if we're talking about people we want to be in not intimate relationships with, or even like our close circle of friends who we're in relationship with, that it's okay to go to the thing, judge for yourself where you are, and say out loud, hey guys, I'm worn out. I'm going to head home. It was great to see you all. Mm-hmm. Just like you could be at a graduate gathering. You know, you've done all the small talk you can possibly do, and you just quietly say, all right, it was great to see you all, and you leave. Yeah. I can't tell you, I'd have to explore this one for quite a while internally about whether this is just like avoiding a problem or avoiding people's reactions or not standing up. I don't know. But I have a sort of like gut feeling of, you don't want to go announcing to everybody, you know, I am a highly sensitive person and I can only stay here for 90 minutes because, well, and I would say even the same thing with our friends. You said, hey, I have a 90 minute limit and then I'm going to leave. I can imagine people starting to monitor like at 70 minutes. Are you okay?
Yeah, but everything that's okay? On them. That's not. Yeah.
I know that's the personal thing, but we talk about all the time about how judgy, vicious, stupid, the university system, mm-hmm. the academic system is. So I don't know. I don't have a right answer there. Yeah. I have an instinct of the, well, here's what I have. I have a coaching philosophy that the way that you're responsible for the system that you create and stop following other people's systems, stop saying, well, they say you're supposed to write every morning from 7 to 9, and I hate mornings, but I get up every day and I never get any work done. Well, then stop doing it. So part of it is an encouragement to know yourself enough to set a boundary to say, I'm going to go ahead and leave now.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the spirit of the professor is in, though, I think that you just scripted a line that maybe is natural for you. I don't know if it is or not, but it isn't natural for everybody.
Which,
so we should go.
What line was that?
Hey, I'm a little worn out. I'm going to go home now. Like, yeah. I don't think there's probably one academic in 10 who could say those words, honestly.
Bye.
So, yeah, I don't think it happens. And I don't think it happens for highly sensitive people, which is what we're talking about. Because I think you're so accustomed to undermining your own impulses and doubting your own impulses and self-sabotage and so on. And I really think that that this is something that's really worth talking about, which is, what is the script? I'm worn out. Now, it's at 100% true that in the academy, where anything related to weakness or mental health challenges is vilified, that no, you're not, it's not going to be good for you to just sort of say, I'm worn out now, I'm leaving, because it's like, we're all worn out. That's not a reason to stop working in a dysfunctional exploitative system that the academy is, according to its perpetrators. But you're going to say, then, you know, the white lie, I have a meeting.
Well, I don't even know about that. I mean,
because it's a meeting with yourself and your well-being.
If you want to continue to the false narrative that exists, and this is happening with people all over the place, pay attention how many people are at meetings and say, I'm sorry, I have to go. I have a project meeting. I have this. I'm working on a thing. I have a deadline. Really have to go because I'm in the middle of this chapter and I need to finish it. There's a lot of people who use work as mm-hmm. their reason for leaving. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue that you're just reinforcing the whole overwork, whatever culture or myth making around work, because people are probably not working. They're lying on the floor going, what the fuck? But I do think that there are ways to gracefully get out of things. I don't think there are ways to gracefully get out of things if you haven't started the work of noticing when overwhelm is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you kind of have a meltdown day, and it's my experience with myself in the past and in talking to clients that the meltdown becomes the focus instead of what happened 100 yards back
mm-hmm.
that led to the meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the first steps is what you already said. It's like, notice that it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a path There's a run up to the thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a constant thing. It's right. a run up to it. So
exactly.
start to notice the on ramp. Mm-hmm. And choose not to get on the on-ramp.
I mean, I think that's also the work of therapy. I was just coaching someone yesterday about examining his CV and thinking about his record, which was quite decent, and his fears that he was encountering, that he was unable to, he was struggling to get job applications written, although he didn't seem to have much trouble doing his academic writing. So that was an interesting,
oh, yeah.
that's not a story we hear a ton of.
Oh, I do.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
And so we were talking, this, looking at it from this perspective, that perspective. And then I said, oh, by the way, let me just ask you this. Do you have a therapist? And he said, yes, I do. And I said, well, have you spoken with your therapist about your fear of writing job applications? And he was like, no, but that's kind of a good no-brainer. I'm not sure why I never thought of that. I'm going to take in a note. I'm going to do that next appointment. And it's just really funny because I have seen that a lot with clients that they might be doing their personal growth work or their healing work with a therapist, and then they're running their career over here and they never connect the two. Or
well,
not
the
never.
Academy doesn't
I don't mean never, but I mean, so many people don't connect the two. And it's just really funny where that psychic barrier is.
Doesn't surprise but me, it's given this, that the whole academy tells you every day that you don't actually have anything other than your work. Why would right. you not? It's interesting.
Right.
So I just getting back to it, I think that the idea that you have to do something, the idea that you have to stay in till the end, the idea that you have to talk to everybody, that you have to do it the way it's done, I think is the first intervention. Mm-hmm. It's the first intervention is your own intervention in instead of saying, wow, I came into this thing and it's browbeating me. Is okay, I came into this thing. Where are the limits of my engagement with mm-hmm. it that I can do so I can stay steady on? Mm-hmm. Because I think that what happens for so many people is they overwhelm and then drop off. Right. And so then they're not there. They don't show up or they mm-hmm. don't get their work done because they got into overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
And I'm not, I just want to be really clear that I'm not like laying this on the individual saying, all you have to do is manage yourself and then you can do this.
Right.
That's
and
not what I mean.
Do some yoga and mindfulness.
It's. I think that there's also the reality that there's a lot of information. I talk a lot with clients who have sensory issues about teaching mm-hmm. and how stunningly exhausting it is,
mm-hmm.
and how online for some folks is even more exhausting. Mm-hmm. All the work they have to do, all the mm-hmm. the way they have to just sort of be
right.
present in this very small space,
mm-hmm.
and I encourage them to not do anything else that day.
Mm-hmm.
Today's a teaching day. Now I talk to people all the time. Oh, today's a teaching day. Yeah, today's a teaching day. I'm taking a nap before it. I'm going to teach the class and then I'm going to back off. And I know that people's reaction to that will be, then I won't get work done, then I'll get behind, then I won't get tenure. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, if teaching drains you and you try to work in the afternoon, the only thing you have to do is make yourself worse.
Right, and you're not getting the work done anyway.
Right.
So this reminds me of the fact that, and this was years, this was my very first semester of teaching after grad school, my first job at University of Oregon, and they assigned me as a brand new assistant professor, fresh out of grad school, to the big intro to cultural anthropology in the ball, or not the ballroom, what's the word,
The big room.
The big room. It had 342 students in it. This was, of course, not very considerate. It was a nice department, though. I don't think it was not malicious. But in any case, there I was. And the weird thing I discovered that semester, and it has remained with me ever since, is that I turned out I was a fantastic teacher of large classes.
Because you're an introvert.
Because I'm an introvert.
Yep.
So this is, I think, speaks directly to highly sensitive people, that this doesn't track along what you think is obvious, like, or people who are engaging with others who are highly sensitive, because you would think, I think an uneducated, an unfamiliar person would think, an introvert is going to never be able to teach a large class. Actually, that's exactly what I could teach best and loved. And then people would love me and they would flock down, sort of like groupies would come down after the class and be like, want to talk more and walk with me to my office. And I'm like, no. No, that's not a thing. I have delivered my thing. It is now finished. This is just basically the identical thing as seeing friends in the pandemic. It's like, no, I did my due diligence, my duty, and now I have to be alone. And it was really weird. And it was weird to discover that I didn't really find small classes in the seminar, grad seminars and stuff, you know, as comfortable as that. Although, you know, I managed to do both. But the point, because you have to push yourself, you know, we all have to push ourselves for sure. But I just think it's valuable. This self-knowledge is...
Self-knowledge is valuable.
Is so valuable, because otherwise what happens with the academic career is, like you always say, the image you love is a leaf caught in the tide of life, right, where you're just being buffeted here and there and here and there with everybody else's expectations. And it works. It absolutely categorically works against self-knowledge. It does.
Yeah.
The trained PhD programs train self-knowledge out of you.
Right. They train your intuition out of you, for mm-hmm. sure. Right. They train your... I was talking about that on a call with a group of scholars today about the academy sort of training away your sense of individuality and your sense and knowledge of yourself, mm-hmm. and how imposter syndrome then comes into that, because it's constantly, instead of looking at you and saying... And this really reflects on what we were talking about last week about gatekeepers. And it reflects on an article that I read today in Chronicle of Higher Ed about, it's not Chronicle of Higher Ed, it's the other one. What's it called?
Inside Higher Ed.
Inside Higher Ed. About, we have to start examining how we can do things differently. Mm-hmm. That, so in, like you say, you have these things that keep slamming against you saying, you have to write like this, you have to talk like this, you have to deliver information like this. And if you are, and that means you're getting feedback on your work. And if you are one of those people, and there are lots of them, where the barrier between you and your work is so very, very, very tiny, mm-hmm. it feels like a body blow. Mm-hmm. If we don't start, you know, adjusting those things, we're going to continue to sort of, the folks who are highly sensitive are the ones who look like the problem.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I lost my train of thought in the middle of that, but I think the point at the end was good, so I'll just go with it. But what I was trying to get at is that whole idea of how, I don't know what I was trying to get at. You said it and then I lost it, but I made a good point.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, it's problematizing the people who are more sensitive over those who are less sensitive. So, you know, those who are more robotic, uh-huh. are going to thrive in this system.
You said the academy
train self-knowledge out of you.
That's where I was trying to go. Uh-huh. Sorry.
PhD programs train self-knowledge out of you.
Right. So in that making your assessment external, mm-hmm. constantly, what do they think of me, or how do I match, or how do I do this? And in the same time, browbeating the individual out of you, mm-hmm. leaves you with this sense of, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if
it's
I'm okay.
It's kind of the empty center.
Right.
You're surrounded by these judgments, these faces right. of judgment, and you feel this void in the right. at the center, where there should be a sense of conviction right. and confidence about, I have learned these things, I have mastered these skills and these theories and methods, and I am now, you know, contributing. But instead it's like, there's nothing, the sense that there's nothing there. Now, a lot of the reclaiming for people leaving the academy is filling that, or not filling the void, because it's not a void. It's understanding it's not a void.
Right.
It's actually filled, overflowing with skills and talents right. and abilities. But you don't know that.
Yeah. And the place I was going on that is that then if you are with that sort of system in place, if you are someone for whom sharp edges are exceptionally painful, so if you have sharp edge advisors who are dismissive, if you have really, you know, sort of aggressive or mm-hmm. assertive, or I don't, whatever word you like, big personality people and that mm-hmm. sort of stuff, and you are sensitive to that vibration, mm-hmm. that's going to make it harder for you. So I would say it makes it very important who you pick as an advisor, mm-hmm. but it also means that you know, like you may have a meeting with your advisor. And you may have to do a whole bunch of work beforehand mm-hmm. to sit with that advisor all that time. Mm-hmm. And then you may need a chunk of time to off-gas that advisor mm-hmm. after it's over. And on the surface, and even in reality, that advisor may not be really that problematic.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But I was thinking about, this is really interesting to me. I was thinking about how you as an advisor were really a lot like you are personality-wise, which is like, you know, like mm-hmm. everything all at once. It reminds me of a friend of ours is thinking about starting an Etsy shop.
I knew you were going to mention that.
So a friend of ours is thinking about starting an Etsy shop. She's expressed over and over and over again how anxious she is about it, right? Like, I don't know if I can do this. So she...
And I said, hey, I ran an Etsy shop for quite a few years. I'd be happy to help you. She said, oh, that's great.
And then Karen just took a fire hose and opened it on her face.
In text.
Of all this stuff. You got to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And she just, it flattened her. She was just like, I can't do this. I don't think I can do this. This is just, I don't think I'm the kind of person who can do this. And we were on a walk yesterday and I was like, okay, so let me just walk you through the steps.
I feel really bad. She didn't say that overtly to me. Well, she said, I'm going to need a little break.
Yeah.
I've known her
25 years, so I know what I know. I need a little break to take this in means, but I've known her. Well,
you're 100% right about how I did it. And it's also that I did it in a classic academic way because, like, PhDs are like, I'm going to give you 150 pages to read, report back to me tomorrow. And they're like, hi.
right.
Japanese.
So I think that's really valuable because this is a good intention.
Right.
This is a friend.
Right.
This is someone you're trying to help do something that you want to help
her. Yeah. Totally believe in her product too, which I totally told her in the process.
Yes. And when it's up, we will tell you, but it will be Winter Wren Textiles, Wren as in the bird.
Hmm.
She makes the most gorgeous bags. I can't even tell you.
Let's just sort of pause for a plug of our friend who doesn't have a shop yet, but will.
Okay. But I want to show you how a highly sensitive person mm-hmm. then would overwhelm.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So you may have the best advisor ever. So mm-hmm. you may be sitting at home going, what's my problem? Mm-hmm. She's just trying to help me. He's just trying to help me. And I'm like lying on the floor because that kind of information overwhelms you.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't necessarily work. It's not going to work to say to Karen, could you turn down the knob on the amount of information that you give me at once? Because
it would work.
Yeah, ish.
I mean, now I know. So moving forward,
right? But
like,
I just mean
I'm not going to do it that way.
I just mean
our
that
friend,
you have this super amount of training, and it's going to kick in. You're going to like it's.
Yeah, right. No, it's true.
I'm not saying it is a negative.
No,
I'm saying it's reality.
Yeah.
So you can't necessarily looping back to the very beginning of the conversation. You can't necessarily go to your advisor and say, "I'm easily overwhelmed. Could you please give me information?"
Right.
Mark, right.
Well, it's a power differential or a power relationship.
Right. But you can say to yourself, dang, a meeting with her mm-hmm. really takes it out of me. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not her, and I know she's on my side, so you can do all that work in advance. You can tell said advisor, I'd like a 30-minute meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Do not allow the advisor to take your afternoon.
Well, that's the thing I was going
to
say.
All the time who say, well, he just kept talking. It's like, right. Yeah. And you say, I have a meeting and get up and walk out.
Well, so see, now we've looped back to where we started,
which is
let's practice the script.
Scripts.
I have a meet. I'm sorry. I have a meet. And I'm going to be okay with leading with I'm sorry, even though generally speaking,
right.
We don't like to see people, especially women, lead with that. But I think for this little script practice, it's fine. I'm sorry. I have a meeting. I have to go. I'm
right.
sorry. I walk into the meeting. This, and for someone like me who is very socially anxious in certain contexts, walking in and saying, I'm sorry. As I mentioned in my email, I only have 30 minutes. I will have to leave at 11:30. Setting that up in the beginning is very helpful to someone like me. And I think to some of our listeners for being able then to have that boundary at 11:30.
Right. And I feel like it sounds like I'm picking on you, but I'm not because you have a beautiful blend of like completely ignoring things and then being overwhelmed by things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're also going to have that advisor who you tell this has to end at 11:30 and they're going because somebody pulled their Chatty Cathy string and it's
right.
just like, brrr.
Right.
And you can even say, and I have done with this with Karen said, I need to leave in 10 minutes. I need to leave in 5 minutes. And the only way I'm going to leave is to leave.
Stand up.
Because
and say, thanks, so I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I really do have a meeting, but let's continue this conversation. I really want to hear what you have to say. So and that's the other thing. I know so many folks, I've mentioned this in many different podcast episodes and blog posts, but so many folks think that having boundaries is being rude and mean and abusive. And there's perfectly courteous, polite ways to do it, which is what I just did. I said, I'm so sorry to have to interrupt you, but I do have a meeting. I do have to go. I'm very interested to hear what you have to say, and I'll follow up by email as soon as I have time this afternoon.
Right.
And it's been as courteous as can be.
Right.
And but it has also held your boundary that you need to be a functioning human.
And let's just go back to highly sensitive people, because I'm very susceptible to overwhelm in those kinds of situations where I've said over and over again to somebody, this is what I need. And it gets to the point that I think, why are you not listening to what I needed? And what I have come to find out is I have not listened to what I need.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go down a, you know, nearly 20-year relationship, the times where I've said, I need to, and you just keep going. Mm-hmm. And then I've popped off of like, mm-hmm. What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to overwhelm because I didn't notice way back there. I just need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to go ahead and go. And I need to, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get in the car and I'll meet mm-hmm. you there. Mm-hmm. Take a second
exactly.
car.
Right.
So I think that, I mean, I know it sounds like we're talking about something different, but we're not. We're talking about those moments when you have reached your nerve endings start mm-hmm. to just go, oh, I have mm-hmm. had enough. Mm-hmm. And for highly sensitive people, that's a lot earlier, mm-hmm. but it's still.
But it's valid.
It's valid.
Just because it's earlier than your friends
right.
doesn't make it invalid. And I want to go back, loop back to my journey of understanding is that that was a huge insight for me vis-a-vis our group of friends, because I reach it so much sooner than six other people do. So I look like I'm really fucking weird. And you have to get comfortable with being weird. Yeah, right. I'm weird. I don't have a problem with using the word weird, but it sounds judgmental, but it's whatever. I'm different. I'm just different. And everybody's different in some way, you know, but it's like you're associating with a bunch of folks who appear to be comfortable with 17-hour academic discussions, but you're not. Well, then fine. Be different. Check out after, you know, an hour and a half.
We're out of time, but I do want to point out that also be okay with yourself if one thing wears you out and another thing doesn't. Because we had dinner with a different friend later who is an academic, and she and Karen are kind of peas in a pod. And after 2 hours, I was tapping Karen going,
time
we kind of need to go, because I had reached my
right.
limit. And she said, well, it hasn't been that long. We stayed longer yesterday or whenever the dinner with our friends was. And I said,
no,
we didn't. It was an hour and a half then. It's 2 hours now. So it's okay if some things don't wear you out as much.
Right.
Don't do them. Don't do apples to apples when they're apples to oranges.
Right.
It's different people, different things. That's all I just wanted to
add.
Yeah,
no, I'm glad you did that because that's an important point.
And we had an example too.
We did have a perfect example, and I was rather chagrined, I must say. I was like, ooh, I see.
I think it's just interesting because we switched off depending. All right. Mm-hmm. So very windy road as usual, but really wanting to look at where those nerve endings start to go. Let's not wait until they're fried and you're lying in the ground on a puddle. Let's start looking at when they start to tingle and what are the strategies, the exit strategies in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to notice patterns, what are the things you can set up in advance to reduce the risk of overwhelm.
And you'll be more effective in your own work by doing this work for yourself, and you will be a better role model for anyone around you or coming up after you, your students. You're going to have a ripple effect. So it's so valuable on so many levels. Thank you for listening.
Bye. Bye for the video.